It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Brought to you in part by Trailer Sales Alabama. A great selection of high-quality trailers at great prices. Financing available. Trailer Sales Alabama on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Now, with reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast, here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, welcome to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward on assignment. And we'll be here, and he's going to be gone this week. And by the next time he comes in, he'll be back from a whitetail hunt in Canada, hitting the rut just right up there. So I am jealous. We'll talk more about that with him when he gets back. Lots going on, of course, in the outdoors. And I will point out that this cold front, finally, is the one that I think puts a lot of things into motion. Actually, I was looking earlier this morning at some of the migration mapping that they do at Ducks Unlimited, their website, and a couple other sites I follow out of the University of Arkansas and Missouri. They have tracking ducks and duck movement. They have the GPS on the ducks. You kind of see, it's interesting. You're just seeing an individual duck, but you're figuring it's migrating with other groups. This seems to be the best push of the season so far. The ducks getting shuffled up with this cold front and making their way south, really leaving places in the Dakotas and Minnesota and Nebraska and Iowa, and starting to see a lot more of those birds moved into Missouri, southern Illinois, in Kansas, and of course Arkansas showing a bunch. They're showing them, of course, as always, the whole way down at the mouth of the Mississippi River as they're started. Yeah, so duck season for the coastal zone in Louisiana starting this morning. So and their duck numbers looked all right from some of the stuff I was looking at online. We'll find out how it looks after the hunt reports get in from down there. Of course, Alabama duck season, we still got a few weeks to go here till after Thanksgiving with duck season here. But also the other part of this is this cold front. You know, Captain Bobby had talked with us earlier in the week during Mobile Mornings, and the trout were starting to act right. They were on the flats next to the deep river channels and you know, in the dead end rivers around the bay. He said they were just up out of the river channels in that flat. And a flat could be, you know, some places that flat's 2.5 feet deep, some places that flat's 4.5, 5 feet deep at a high tide. But that's where he's finding the fish. He said they were really still hitting live shrimp a little bit better than voodoos or DOAs, but the bite was really pretty darn good. This cold front that we're dealing with now and the one that reinforces coming up on Tuesday should be the trigger, as long as we don't get, and it doesn't look like this next cold front's bringing any big amount of rain. That should keep the river levels that are dropping down, Barry steam plant and other readings dropping down. I think Barry's going to be below 5, which is good. And then we get this cold weather that should, knock on wood, right, after last year, kick off some wide open causeway fishing. Although while we're talking about causeway fishing, I think I need to be specific and say kicks off some speckled trout fishing on the causeway, because redfish and bass fishing has been fantastic so far, and it just really has been going since August. And it's still very, very good. But getting those bird schools and the trout fishing rolling this cold front's definitely a step in the right direction. All right, when we come back, guest Chuck Sykes, director of Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. He was in studio last week doing some other things with me, or this week, well, like 2 days ago. He was in studio with me, and he hung around after the bid day show and chatted with me about a lot. Game check. Turkey numbers in the state of Alabama, deer in the state of Alabama, the baiting stamp in Alabama, what's legal on that. We'll play that discussion coming up in just a second. We'll come right back. Chuck Sykes, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama. Also, that guy on the Management Advantage TV show, so darn good. He lives two lives, man. He's a cool guy, and he joins us next on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along. And good to have Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, our friend Chuck Sykes, in to talk about, I don't know, a couple things going on out there. Some of them may have to do with baiting stamps. And you know what? I want to, and I do want to get into this is a question that's come up a couple times. baiting stamps. People will say it's a corn stamp, it's so I can feed corn.
Yep.
But I think they could get in trouble because it's not just corn that qualifies as bait.
No, we get that a lot. It's, you know, I got my corn stamp, and then I'll get an email, can I hunt over salt? Well, if you've got that baiting license, you can hunt over apples, you can hunt over salt licks, you can hunt over corn, you can hunt over horse feed, anything that can be fed.
Right, so you can't, so it's not just, yeah, it's not just corn, because people think about this, we'll go, let's you and I go in the store, not even going to the co-op, let's just go in the regular box store or something, yeah, like that, and they got Buck Magic and Buck Magnet and Apple Crush Persimmon Explosion and yep, whatever all these things yep are. That's
bait.
That's bait.
Yes, that's bait. So if you're going to use all that, buy your license and have fun.
Okay, because I do think there's been some people that think corn, but I mean, God bless, you could just go look at a store and see how many different kinds of attractants or baits.
Yes.
Or, yep. If you're putting any of that out,
you need to have that baiting license. Yeah, the only thing that you could legally hunt over is white salt or those all-natural rocks.
Yeah, I put that out one time, the Trophy Rock or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a brand name.
Yeah, there's several of those. That's the only thing that was legal before this that you can hunt over. Now, if you want to feed and not hunt over it, the area definition is still in effect, so you can have your feeder more than 100 yards and out of the line of sight by natural terrain or vegetation, keep doing what you were doing.
I thought we were required to bait.
You know, a lot of people think that.
I'm picking fights.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like having to hunt till February the 10th. It's not mandated that you have to hunt to February the 10th. You can quit at Christmas if
That's
you
right.
want to.
That's right.
And the same thing with feed. If you don't want to feed, don't feed.
You know, Mike and I were talking about this on a show a couple of weeks ago, and from where he's hunting in the Black Belt, where I am in Washington County and Mobile County, and we started going through pictures of spotted fawns, ones that are what I call biddies,
mm-hmm,
up to ones that are fading, ones that are, and yep, saw this breadth of age class, and you know, we talked about it, what you had talked about in the past, the biology that says that these does are getting bred later,
mm-hmm,
the rut, you know, we have this rut down here, it can yep be in February, is the same biological reason that we laid off the does at the beginning of bow season. And
exactly.
I mean, we're still, and even after that point, we're still seeing those spotted fawns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, it's common sense.
Right.
If she is genetically predispositioned to rut in February, it's pretty simple. March, April, May, June, July, August, September.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly 7 months, she'll be dropping that fawn in September. Do you really want to orphan him?
Yeah.
October 15th.
No.
That's just common sense.
It could be. You'd only have to get on a high horse biologically. If you just want more deer to kill down the road.
And better deer. You need his mother with him as long as possible. Let her wean him naturally.
And what is that? I know everything is site-specific. I'm getting ready to hear this. But from a fawn being born to where it can function on its own, is there any kind of benchmark there?
Look, they can function within, you know, a month.
Okay.
They can make it. But there's a lot of your listeners that grew up on a farm like I did. And I go back to cattle.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up, my father still got cows. Had you rather wean a calf at 6 months old or wean him 3 months old?
Right. No, 6 months old. Yeah.
When that calf is a year and a half old, he's going to probably be a couple of hundred pounds heavier.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. On
than
cattle,
the
yeah.
than the one that was orphaned early. So it's just common sense. You want the mother to stay with that buck fawn, especially till she gets ready to wean him. That way, he's got the best chance of maximizing his body. Period. You don't want him to have to be out there roughing it from the time he's a month old because you couldn't wait a few days and you shot his mama.
Well, how many times have we been told that not until the buck is done? The reason we're looking for 4.5 and 5.5 and 6 year old bucks, 6.5 year old bucks, is they've done building the skeletal structure and now can even put more
right.
energy into antlers, right?
Yeah, I mean, it takes them till 3 years old before their body is in good condition where more can go to their antlers. Their skeleton is built by then. So if he's behind the eight ball being born late then you orphan him early. You might as well go ahead and kill him too if you're really trying to grow, maximize your deer. You just go ahead and shoot him too. If you're going to shoot the mama, shoot him too.
Well, you and I have talked about this, and while he added 10 days, because that's commensurate with the 10 days added at the end, conceivably, it's all science-specific, but it could be you don't need to shoot a doe till December.
Oh, if you're looking at strict biology?
Yeah.
No, December 1 would be when I would want to shoot a doe that has that late rut. However,
I know
you've got enough sense to do this. I do too. We're on the Deer Management Assistance Program on our place. So October the 15th, I can shoot a doe if I want to because I know which ones to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to shoot a yearling doe fawn. I'm going to have a big doe come in with her this year's fawn. Her last year's doe's dragging along with her. That's the one I'm going to shoot. So it's common sense.
No, but, you know, we hear this too. You know, I was talking about wet does or dry does. And I heard a discussion the other day, I want to get your opinion on it, that a whitetail doe can be bred. I mean, people think, oh, well, she's going to be dry up at 4 or 5. There's some old doe mamas out there.
Oh, I've killed some that were 7, 8, 9 years old that are still producing.
They're still producing.
Oh, absolutely.
And wouldn't they be the best? The same way, let's go back to cattle. Because I run cattle. You grew up around cattle. If I got that cow, as she gets older, to a certain point, but gets older, she's better at birthing. I don't lose her. I don't have an issue with her. She births great calves. They live.
Now, see, now you're thinking common sense. That you can't do that. But, yes, when I was consulting, that was an analogy I used all the time. I want my 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old cows. I'll take them over a first calf heifer any day. And you do the same thing with a doe. That 6-year-old doe, she knows where the best food is every month out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And she's higher in the pecking order, so she's going to get hers first.
Therefore, her fawns will.
That's who I want to be raising my little ones if you are wanting to maximize. Now, if I'm needing to cull, if I've got too many deer, then I'm not going to select. I'm going to just shoot them all when they come by.
Right, but if you are trying to, I mean, but the idea
if you're
is,
because
people say, I'm not going to shoot you. I'll shoot one of those old does.
I like those with the racing stripes still down their back. That's my preference.
It's
seriously.
Smaller backstrap, but better.
Look, I managed a piece of property right after college over in Lee County where we grew some incredible deer. We had some of the Georgia genetics.
Yeah.
So we had our Georgia deer rutted the first week of December, then the first week of January, then our Alabama deer kicked in the end of January. Well, it took me a year to figure.
That's cheating. That'll spoil you.
So what I did was I put a 100-pound limit on my does. You did not shoot a doe over 100 pounds.
Oh, wow.
All right.
Okay.
That was because if it was more than 100 pounds, that made it either a 3 or 4-year-old Alabama doe.
Right.
Or it made it a Georgia deer, period, because they had a bigger frame.
And so that's why you put
and
that
you think I'm lying, but my restriction on my hunters were 17-inch limit. All right, that was about 80% 3-year-old bucks. I knew I was going to lose some 2-year-olds, but it was either 17 inches wide or 17-inch main beam, one of the two. In 6 years, that was 85% of my 2-year-olds because I had selected for those better quality deer.
I could do it there
because I had two different genetic stocks of deer there, and I intentionally selected my Georgia deer over my Alabama deer by putting that antlerless limit of 100 pounds.
You put the pressure, you selected out the Alabama deer.
Yes.
Letting the Georgia deer fill in.
Yes. So rather than the club having the big doe contest, I had the little doe contest. Absolutely. And everybody tried to kill the smallest doe.
This is why it's so great to talk to you about this, because, I mean, there's preconceived notions when, you know, I'm going to shoot the old doe, I'm going to shoot the big doe. Although, listen, there have been times when there's some of those does are just so dang smart that they torment you.
I give them a one stomp limit.
Y'all,
if she stomps one time, that's fine. Don't hang around and rub it in. If you stomp twice, you're going to regret it.
Right. Because I think we've all had that. That would, I mean, you talk about the PhD of the woods.
Yes. That's when my management strategy takes a back seat to my anger. And it's like, all right, you've done it one time. You've told everybody I'm here.
Right.
Don't rub it in. Don't stand there and snort at me.
Well, she's going to sit there and do, you know, okay. And with all the deer and all the hunts you've been on, all the deer you've killed, you know, I say this, and I know there'd be a exception to every rule, but until there's maybe a certain age class that it doesn't. Once does are like a 5.5-year-old buck and a 5.5-year-old doe, maybe the fact that 5.5-year-old buck doesn't move, but when he moves, I'll watch him come in, like say they come into a food plot, comes in that food plot. When he finally decides to come in that food plot, unless he's running does or mm-hmm. something, he goes ahead and puts his head down and eats. I mean, he'll stand back in the woods and look for a while, but when he comes mm-hmm. in there, he's eating. That 5.5-year-old doe takes half a bite, looks up, looks at everybody,
yep.
like acts like she's going to run, then stops, makes everybody nervous.
You can ask Casey the next time
Casey Schubman from Management Advantage, yeah.
He has filmed me kill my best deer, and one of the best trophies that I have ever killed was an 8.5-year-old doe right outside of Tuskegee in Macon County with my bow. I would take her over a 4 or 5-year-old buck in Illinois any day.
Now, why is that?
What you just said.
She
That's
was
the
that
smartest
smart?
Thing
they are
in
smart.
The woods, period.
I think they know. I mean, and I do believe the studies show how older bucks will sometimes, you know, with routine let people walk by them and not move and not bust out of places. I think the does do that, and they know whose truck that is that just came in on the road, and oh, if they pulled in, they're going to be going to the camp patch here about 3:30, so I'll be going out as they come in. I mean,
I enjoyed bow hunting, and I've killed some good deer, but shooting a 5 or 6-year-old doe in Alabama with a bow, that's one of the toughest animals in the world to kill.
Yeah, when are you going to get the draw on her? Y'all think about that. She's not going to give you a lot of...
That's right.
She knows what tree you're going to sit in before you pick it.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Okay, I would have... And this is great because we're talking about what people are going to be going in the woods the next couple of weeks, and they're going, all right, well, we're not going to shoot does opening week. Some people do, but you know, say, I'm not going to shoot does opening weekend. I don't want to make noise. It's our chance. And then we'll kind of... Maybe it goes back to when we had doe days, you know, and those were December.
Yep.
And maybe we get back into some of that. And if you're on DMAP or something like that, it's a different story. But if you're just trying to make sure you give those young bucks that are fawns the best chance or whatever, that it's not a bad thing to select for December.
It's all in – site specific.
Yeah, I know.
It's
That's
person
a tough
specific yeah. because if you think about it this way, I'm – even now as a director – I still assist a couple of clubs. I don't charge for consulting anymore, but we still have a technical assistance group that helps private landowners. Well, I still have a club or two that I assist, and one of them is in Greene County, 6,500 acres, best of the best.
Mm.
I try to get them to shoot all their does before Christmas.
Okay.
All right, it's twofold. I want those bucks to have to get up on their feet and look.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of times if you get in these big clubs, well, I'm going to wait, and you need to kill 75 does, all of a sudden it's February the 2nd, it's like, holy smoke, we've killed 30.
Yeah.
Now what are we going to do? So I try to be smart and be selective. I don't just shoot every doe that walks by. I'll start day one. And select the right ones to shoot get in that position of I've just got to take numbers out and I'm shooting indiscriminately and I lose a knot head or two or I don't hit my quota.
Well, you just described what I've seen a lot of times go down.
Yeah. Or I'm going to shoot a buck and then I'm going to shoot a doe before she leaves.
She's going to stand.
He's going to stand because it's going to be a knothead that's going to be the last one standing there looking around.
You're right.
You don't ever shoot the first one in a plot, and you don't ever shoot the last one that's standing there looking around going, what in the world just happened? Because I can assure you, it's not a female.
Hey, we're coming back more with Director Sykes, and we're going to talk more about the deer. Also, I want to get into a little discussion of what we had talked about before, turkey numbers in the state, and you know what the weather of this spring and summer meant. I'm probably going to hear site-specific on poults and hatches, but I'll give him a chance to tell me more about site-specific when we come back on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Great to have Director of Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes, in studio to tell me things are site-specific.
I speak the truth.
You do speak the truth. And it's a lot of fun to talk about this. And you and I spent most of our time talking about, because we're going to get to the discussion of big giant bunks, but that all comes from youngins. It comes from fawns.
And starting them off right.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing that you made the analogy that was – I picked that one up, and that there was a spot in my head for that, because spending time working cattle makes sense. It makes sense when you wean calves too early and they don't put on the weight. Same thing with that buck fawn. The faster you can get him to where he starts putting more energy, more protein, into calcium, into building a rack, the faster you got a big giant buck.
Absolutely.
The other side of littles we're talking about – little turkeys and poults. And this is one of these concerns, man, throughout the Southeast, let alone here in Alabama. Do we have an issue with turkey populations?
Depends on who you talk to.
Site specific?
Yeah.
Okay. But I do hear more people talk about it than have
in the past.
Overall,
I think we are in a decline. There are some places that, because of proper management, proper hunting, they're fine. They don't know any different. But I would say Southeast-wide, yes, we are not in the heyday of turkeys.
And can we, I guess, like you said, certain properties can manage correctly to bring it back. What were we doing? Okay, because you go back to think about quail, right, and quail numbers, and unwittingly, our fathers or grandfathers were doing stuff. Believe me, I can tell you, my kinfolk weren't trying to have quail. Yep. They were surviving, and there happened to be quail. Then we saw the habitat management's change affecting quail populations. What were we doing in 1990 or something that was better for turkeys habitat-wise than today?
There was a lot more burning going on. People weren't as scared of fire.
Okay.
There wasn't TSS shot that you could kill one at 75 yards with a 20 gauge.
Why are you looking at me?
There wasn't.
It was 45.
Everybody and their brother wasn't hunting with decoys. And I'm not throwing stones at that.
No, you're just talking about the
facts.
I'm
just telling you some facts that can contribute. Our coyote numbers, our predator numbers, bobcats, foxes, raccoons, and possums. The fur market was still pretty decent, so there was a lot of people that were still trapping. It's just a...
Okay.
There's a stair step of habitat management, predator management, hunter management. There's not one thing that's going to fix it. There's not this one magic bullet that's going to fix it. It's a combination.
You talk about predators, and, you know, two different camps here. We've got nest predator and live turkey predator, and often they switch up. They do both. Who has the biggest effect, the nest predator or the
100% the nest. 100% nest predators.
You and I've had the conversation that if I had to, I said, you can't trap everything here. You got to choose. You can't trap coyotes and bobcats and trap coons and possums.
Coons and possums every day. Not even a consideration.
And as a very casual trapper, a lot easier to catch coons and possums in a DP.
And you're doing a lot more for your ground nesting birds. You may not be doing as much for your deer.
Right.
Because a coon's not really going to take down a fawn.
Like no, but we're talking turkeys. Yeah,
but we're talking turkeys, 100%, no question.
No, I want to get in coyote trapping and talk about that in a second. But on this turkey thing, so there were things that we were doing back then, 1990, that we're not doing now, habitat-wise and trapping-wise. And is it fair to say I don't want to say better hunters.
No, we're not better hunters. We're more effective.
More successful.
Yeah, we're more effective. We're not better hunters.
Right. Probably the contrary.
Yeah.
I mean, because a pop-up blind and a decoy makes
and
everybody
TSS
a super.
Makes everybody an expert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we look at this, so if people are doing it correctly, they're not harvesting hens, though. Harvesting gobblers. Mm-hmm. Supposedly you look at any kind of, now people want to ungulate, want to get the ratios right for the rut and this and that, but just for keeping the species alive, heck, you can have, a 20-to-1 buck to doe mm-hmm. ratio, and they're going to procreate. In the turkey world, are there hens not getting bred, or?
That's the million-dollar question, and there's a lot of states looking at this right now, whether we're harvesting our gobblers too early, before all the hens get bred, whether there's too much activity in the woods before initiation of nesting that's disturbing things, we don't know. But the bottom line, to keep turkey numbers robust, you've got to have recruitment. Mm-hmm. You've got to have little turkeys that actually make it out of the egg. Then you got to have little turkeys that make it to big turkeys. That's the most basic form.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how we get there, that's the question that we're all looking at right now, is seeing if there's too much harvest of gobblers too soon. If there's an accidental hen mortality with people hunting too early and turkeys still being in big flocks. I don't think that's an issue here in Alabama, but some of our northern partners are saying it is there in their states. So there's a bunch of different people looking at different factors that slowing down reproduction.
And I kind of following to get there, to get from baby turkey to 4-year-old gobbler.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, which is a challenging.
That's a one in a million, basically.
I've heard this before. The odd, when we're standing over there over a gobbler that's got hooks sharp enough to cut your skin and looking at him, it's a miracle.
Yes.
That turkey's there.
Look at what he went through. First mm-hmm. of all, mom and daddy had to meet. Then mama had to protect him in an egg from every coon, possum, hawk, crow, snake. Then he hatched, and she had to protect him from bobcats, coyotes, coons, possums, snakes, owls, and hawks. Then he had to make it through rednecks for 3 years,
yeah.
Like me and you.
Yeah, as a 2-year-old that would run into anything.
That would run into anything, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a miracle that he made it to that.
So getting there, and I don't know which one, and I know that's what y'all are looking at, what's right, but it could be quantity or quality. Do you have, hens doing what your management would to help that hen have more success, more of those eggs hatch into poults that make it on up, or to have more hens having more clutches with maybe smaller success, but just by the numbers?
We don't know. That's it. I mean, we're looking. In a perfect world, I would like for every hen to be able to come off the nest successfully and raise a half a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
But
what's the number, by the way, to hit neutral, and what takes it up, what takes it down?
You're going to have to ask somebody smarter than me, but right now our poult to hen is not good. We've got more hens that don't have poults than we do, and even on the hens that have poults, I think the number was down around 2.3 or something like that.
And that's barely hanging on to not go decline phase,
right? That's concerning. That's mm-hmm. concerning. So we don't have enough hens with poults. That's why we're looking at timing of shooting gobblers too soon, or there's some reason. Is it too many predators? Is it enough gobblers?
Does she not have poults because her nest got raided enough times that she didn't do it?
Right.
Or did the poults get eaten, or did she never get bred?
Right. So that's one question. And then the hens with the poults, why do they only have less than three?
Why don't they have six?
Is it too many raccoons? Is it too many hawks? Is it too many snakes? Is it fire ants? What is it? So there's several questions that are being looked at right now. It's not going to be an easy answer,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be one where we're going to have to make some decisions that aren't going to be popular one way or the other. I've got people burning down our door wanting us to reduce the bag limit and shorten the season because they are sure that's going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've got just that many people saying, no, don't do that. That's not going to fix anything.
Well,
so no matter what we do, we're going to make somebody upset.
Well, I want to circle back. See, he's going to like this. I want to circle back to why it's important to, use the technology that's out there to get the data so y'all as scientists can do something with it. So with our app, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just for deer.
No, it's for turkeys.
Game check on turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
To have some idea, because I would say, okay, I'm going to play it this way. Here's why somebody who thinks it's gobbler dependent may be interested in this. Because I believe, without any facts, I believe that people don't kill nearly as many turkeys as people think that gobblers, as people think they do. Because reality is most people get to go on the weekends, and then it rains on Saturday, but Sunday we got a church thing and I can't go, and I went opening day, but I didn't get to this idea that to me five turkey limit is. People say, y'all got so many turkeys in Alabama. I said, go try to work a full-time job and have a couple kids and kill five turkeys in a season. I don't think a lot of people do it. But I don't know. I'm not. But we would know if we put that information in.
Yeah, if you look at just game check, no. There's just a handful that do.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Is that accurate?
Well, that's the problem. So if you're trying to make these decisions to where you can affect the change to benefit turkey populations – and you don't
look at me.
Right.
I killed two turkeys last year.
What's wrong? What happened? What did you do with Chuck Sykes?
I personally killed two turkeys.
Okay, how many did you watch killed?
A bunch. So, you know, me, a five-bird limit, it doesn't matter. I'm never going to kill five. But I'm lucky if I kill two because I'm always shooting back up.
That's true, but you facilitated people killing turkeys. I'm going to brag on you because you're pretty awesome at Turkey Woods. You facilitated people shooting turkeys that might not have been killed.
Yes. Yeah, agreed. So, you know, take me out of this position. I'm just a turkey hunter in the state. You could make the limit one in Alabama. It ain't going to affect me one bit. Right. I'll kill my one and I'll still watch 10 or 15 die
mm-hmm.
because I'm going to go with people and I'm going to call for them.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people that are not like that. They want to kill their five turkeys. They've got enough turkeys on their place they can kill five. So what we're trying to do is balance that. And look, you've been doing this as long as I have. When we were in high school and college, you could get in any club around for $100 if you agreed not to deer hunt.
Yep, turkey rights.
Just got your turkey rights.
Yep.
And there was nobody there but you.
Yep.
Try that today.
Oh, yeah, there's no
– there is
it's
none.
Actually the exception. You'll find land to lease for deer hunting that does not come with the turkey.
That's right. So there's a big difference. If you got 5,000 acres and 10 years ago you had one hunter that killed five turkeys, it didn't hurt anything.
Right.
But now on that 1,000 acres, you've got six hunters, and each one of them try to kill five turkeys, then that may be a problem.
That is true.
Just common sense. And look, I don't want y'all start writing letters and calling. Chuck says we're going to reduce the limit. That is not what I said.
No, but you and I are.
We're talking common sense on what may be happening.
I wonder what the – okay, so from your biologist's perspective, and I know we'll get site-specific and everything, but how many encounters can a gobbler have? So – you know, because we think about this, go back to deer. And I don't know if there's a fair analog because you go back to the way it was when you and I started deer hunting too. And you'd sit out there and it'd be the 31st doe would come out before the first spike would come out.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But our numbers were solid. We grew this big herd that we've had to reduce and deal with in Alabama. There were some bucks are probably worn out, not from chasing, but from that.
Yeah.
What about a gobbler? Can he...
He can service a dozen hens. It's not a problem. Where a buck, even in good buck-to-doe ratios, everything's as good as it gets. All the studies are showing if that one buck sires four fawns a year, mm-hmm. that's pretty strong.
Okay. The turkey can sire, that gobbler can sire.
Because he can breed that hen one time.
Right, and she holds it. And, I'm trying to throw different things in, saying, because even though it ends up being for hunters that we care about, the end result is, you know, a big gobbler dragging a rope comes strutting in front of us. But to get there, it's a numbers game to get more turkeys on the landscape.
Yep. So,
and I don't care to get there. I don't care what those turkeys are, if they're hens or gobblers, just as long as it makes a bigger population. Because eventually, I know that it'll work out. There'll be plenty of gobblers.
Yep. And look, I just want people. not to worry about themselves so much and worry about the animal that mm-hmm. you say that you love.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard all the stories. Well, me killing five and me killing three, gobbler harvest doesn't matter.
Okay, so okay, yes.
But common sense, if I kill five and it's only five that's there, or I kill three and there's two left, there's more left.
Yes, there are. Yes, look, the math works
just,
out.
That's just common sense.
Right.
So there is two left. And if next year you only kill a part, there's more left again. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that's going to go into this, and I need people just to...
Well, you need the information. This is what I'm getting to.
Yes, we need our research from Auburn. We need game check information from hunters. We need people doing the avid turkey survey and giving us information on sightings and numbers of gobbles and our poult survey where we can see what the hens are doing. We need as much information as we can where we can use science to make the best decision. That's it.
Yeah.
Then we'll have to fight the political battle.
But right now, you're just trying to get the elements.
Of making, I need a case. I'm getting all the information for the case.
We got an equation for you to solve, but it sounds like you don't have A or B or C or whatever. I mean, you got to have these different things.
Yes. Yep.
So we do that through Game Check.
Mm-hmm.
We do that through the Avid Turkey Hunter. So these are all, and these are things that are on OutdoorAlabama.com.
That's right. That people can help us do. Don't complain. Help.
I mean,
that's it. Just help.
Right. No, and I'm interested. I'm interested in seeing how. Is there a silver bullet? Is there one thing you change that has this massive or is it a little bit of change on all these things we're talking about? Hey, we mentioned you're talking about predators. I made you pick your predators, right? But then you said, but unless you got deer, we were talking about coyotes. Let's talk about coyotes for a second. So I read these books, and tell me if I'm off, that we're never going to win this. If you think it's a war against coyotes, we're never going to win it.
No. Coyotes and cockroaches will be here if you nuke the place.
I mean, just through, and I may not have time to talk about the whole biology, but the nature of the more coyotes you kill, the more are recruited into the system because the bitch will drop more pups.
Yep,
in the.
They are some of the most adaptable critters in the world. They can live off of meat. They can live off of vegetables. They can eat anything and survive. They can live in the city. They can live in the country.
They can hunt as a pack. They can hunt by themselves.
It doesn't matter. They're adaptable.
Right.
If bounty systems have been put on them, kill them all, do however, you're not going to get rid of coyotes. So you need to manage them, not try to eradicate them, because it ain't never going to happen. It may for a short period of time. I may can catch, hire Casey and him catch all of them mm-hmm. on 2,000 acres for the 10 days that he's there, and 2 weeks later, there's going to be one eased back in.
Yeah, because they said, man, look at this place.
Yeah, this is great. This there's nobody here fighting me, and yeah. Look at all the food.
Right. So when it comes to trapping, and you know, I'm rank amateur, been doing this for about 7 or 8 years, and looking at you and looking at Casey, I realize how rank amateur I am in trapping. But I've had some success, and the little bit I'm doing, I'm focusing, even though I want to, you know what, I'm looking at some on camera right now, some coyotes I want to trap during the wintertime
mm-hmm.
because I'm interested in fur quality and getting
yep.
stuff tanned.
Yep.
In reality, though, that's for fun. If I want to make any difference with my trapping, when am I trapping, Chuck?
You need to, for turkeys.
Wait, for deer.
Yeah, I'm going to hit turkeys first.
Okay.
I'm going to take those nest predators out in February and March.
Okay.
Right before that hen starts laying, where I can try to create that vacuum for a few weeks till she can get those poults out of the egg and up walking.
So I'm up there listening for goblin, doing some stuff at the property,
and I'm running
my trap line.
Yep. If I'm worried about deer, I'm going to catch my coyotes right before my does start dropping. So, again, we're talking about a February rut. February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. So August and September, that's when I'm going to start wearing the coyotes out, hoping that those does can drop the fawns, get them up, get them a little more mobile before more start coming in.
And
it's timing.
And that's the thing on the coyote trapping. It's not, you know, it has more appeal to a lot of us that it's wintertime, we're already up there and doing mm-hmm. that. And do it. I mean, it doesn't hurt, and it's sure fun.
Yep.
But if you're trying to, the fact that we're not getting rid of them all.
That's recreation. That's not management.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so if we're managing, this is something maybe combine it with spraying fields or doing stuff in August and September. You're going to be at the camp prepping, working, getting ready to plant. I'm always trying to find, because some people, it's a tough thing to get away. You know, they only have so many weekends away from, you know, the house.
Management is work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes. A management plan
it's
on a piece of property
work, but
is work. Yes.
Satisfying work. All right. I know you got to go. Thank you for your time. Thanks for being on with us this morning. It's just the beginning of discussions we're going to have on all this and continue. Just remind you, game check is important for so many reasons. Obviously, the legality of it, but there's the science behind it and why it is needed. All right, coming right back to wrap it up here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Big thank you to Director of Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes. Had to get him back on the show soon. And remember, we've got on the 21st that CWD event going on in Spanish Fort. If you want to go learn more about that, details online, outdooralabama.com. And remember, you can check us out, facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. Stories we're watching, interviews we do, your pictures, our pictures. We'll share it all over on the Facebook page. All right, it's time for me to pack up and head to the woods. Man, we got some cool weather. We got some colder weather coming on Tuesday into Wednesday morning in the 20s. Enough to start killing off some browse. Hopefully moving deer more towards just straight acorn pattern or to your patch. Or, hey, in this day and time, to your bait station. All right, good luck. Get out there and have a great weekend, and we'll do it all again next week.